Hi everyone, I'm Doug and I am alcoholic. I bring you greetings from the Young at Heart group in Los Gatos, California again. And again, for those of you who came in later this afternoon, I want to just acknowledge you for taking time out on a beautiful Danish Saturday to come hang out with drunks and to learn something about Alcoholics Anonymous or to share something about Alcoholics Anonymous or to fellowship. What it shows is a great dedication and an interest in AA that you're here, and I want to acknowledge that and thank you for taking the time out to come be here for this. I don't remember if I said it before, but I'll say it again. You know, I'm not an expert on anything at all. I'm not a guru or big book expert or 12 and 12 expert or anything like that. I'm just a drunk that got sober a number of years ago and found a passion for our program of Alcoholics Anonymous, especially as it's laid out in our literature. And I love studying our literature. And the few things that I've learned over the years, I love to try to pass on. So if I say anything that can't be rectified with what's in our literature, feel free to ignore it. I'm going to try to speak more from my experience and from a little bit of what has been taught to me over the years. I love the format of the last workshop that was done. And I don't know if this is intended to be just a talk or if it was intended to be a workshop, but I might try to end it a tad early so that way we can have some of your sharing so that I can also learn about some of the neat things that you've been able to do in your steps 10 and 11. So kind of starting off, let's set the tone or the timeline for where are we in the steps. Step 10 obviously comes after step 9. I needed to learn that because I try to be an intellectual. And my sponsor told me that they were in order and that I had to take them in order. I tried not to. I heard somewhere along the line I could take it cafeteria style. Take what you like and leave the rest. And my sponsor said, that doesn't apply to you, Doug. And he insisted that I take all of them. So, you know, at the end of the ninth step, we've done it, this beautiful house cleaning. You know, on steps 4 through 9, we've taken an inventory, we've shared it with someone else and with the God of our understanding. We've become willing to ask God to remove those defects of character and those shortcomings, and we did that in 6 and 7. And we've gone through and we've made a list of the people we've harmed, and wherever possible, we went out and we tried to make the direct amends to them as much as we could, so long as it wouldn't injure them or others. What that does is that rhythm is setting me up for a way of living that is going to apply in all my affairs going on after that. And we'll see it in our big book. And right after step 9 in the big book, it moves on to, it says, this thought brings us to step 10. What thought is it? Well, that these things will always materialize if I work for them. Brings me to step 10. And in step 10, it talks about continuing to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. Well, it was a couple of key words in there. First off, the step says that I had to continue to take personal inventory. And that does. I asked my sponsor, so, well, when does continue mean? He says, now. It's not one of these things that, you know, at nighttime or just, you know, once a week or, you know, kind of doing an annual reflection or something like that. He says, the way he told me, because I was a little bit thick, is he said, you know, you've learned how to take your inventory. And the moment that you start getting cross, you start getting worried, you start getting, you know, angry at somebody or you become afraid, you now have the tools to be able to deal with that. You can no longer claim ignorance. And so he pointed me out into the big book where it talked about how, you know, we'd commenced on this vigorous way of living and we've now entered the world of the spirit. Step 12 says that we had a spiritual awakening as a result of the steps, but my big book tells me that I'm having that spiritual experience all the way back in step 9. You know, God's allowing me to do for me what I couldn't do for myself, and I've realized that my spirit has become awake. And it says that, you know, our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. And I like the analogy that we're using the word grow, because green things grow. You know, I can't just get to a certain point and stop and say, this is pretty enough. You know, I'm good enough. I don't need to do anything else. I want to continue to grow. Because the way I was at 1 year or 2 years or even 5 years or even 10 years is very different than the human being that I am today. And if I continually look at myself, I'm a different human being today. You know, I'm different in my spiritual life. I'm different in my mental life. I'm different in my work life. I'm different in my relationship at home. And I need to continue to relearn and re-get to know myself, reacquaint myself. And step 10 is one of the great ways to do that. Step 11 is even better, and we'll get to that in a second. But if you look in the big book, you'll see all of the elements of steps 4 through 9 right in the middle of step 10. It says it's not an overnight matter. It should continue for a lifetime. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. What step is that? That's 4, you know. It's in Danish. I can't read it. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. That sounds like 6 and 7. Says we discuss them with somebody immediately. Sounds like step 5. And we make amends quickly where we have harmed anyone. That's 8 and 9. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. So what I believe that it's trying to tell me there is that this is a step for me to be able to use any time that I become spiritually sick. As I'm walking through life and I'm getting onto the highway or I'm at my job and I see a phone number pop up on my phone that I don't want to answer, you know, I can go and say, oops, what's going on? Why am I resistant to this? Am I angry at that person? Am I afraid of something? Whatever. And I have that inventory list that we did in step 4 right here in my head, you know, and I can immediately go through and go, oh, that person pissed me off. Why? What is the cause? What part of self was affected? You know, what did I do, if anything, to start this ball rolling? And what are my character defects behind that? And I have done that enough times now to where it has become habit. And even in the 12 and 12, it talks about how, I'll get that later, thank you. Way too much stuff in here. It even talks about here, you know, the wise have known that no one can make much of life until self-searching becomes a regular habit, until he's able to admit, accept what he finds, until he patiently and persistently tries to correct those wrongs. You know, that wasn't in my nature to correct wrongs. If I harmed you, it's like, you deserved it, and I've got mine, and I'm going to go away, thank you. You know, that was kind of where my attitude was. But what did you give me? You gave me a conscience. You gave me a conscience by taking these steps, and I realized that my actions affect others a lot, a lot. You know, even when I'm sober, I don't have to be drunk to harm people. Even the 12 and 12 goes through and it talks about the emotional hangover, the direct result of yesterday's and sometimes today's excesses of what? Negative emotion, like anger, fear, jealousy, and the like. I have a lot of negative emotions that can come up, and all of a sudden I become really spiritually sick and I shut myself off. And what was important is that I had to learn how to be able to remove those negative emotions as quickly as possible. Doesn't mean that I'm always going to be whistling and singing through life and, oh, I'm so happy to go to work today. And, oh, I love the fact that it's raining on my car and I left the windows open. Stuff will happen. Stuff will happen. And I'm human. Life will happen. You know, we will go through some challenging times when we're sober. Case in point, 2008, I was in Alaska attending an AA service event, and I got an email from my mother. I was working in Tokyo at the time, announcing that she had cancer, and she wasn't going to do anything about it, and she's just going to let it take its course. And I had to fly back to Tokyo from Anchorage via Seattle, and it was all I could do to keep from running down and being with her. She died a year later. My sponsor died the week after that. My father died the next year. My mother-in-law died. I went through a lot of challenges and was unemployed for 2.5 years. But all through that, I had to watch my behavior. I had to watch my attitudes. I had to watch the fears because I knew that I was not spiritually well and I had to get really close to you and to my higher power if I was going to survive that difficult period. And I did. I'm still sober today. And I'm happy today. And it's only because of taking that regular inventory and go, oh, there goes Doug again, I'm being selfish again, or there goes Doug again, I'm being inconsiderate of others, or I'm being fearful. But what happens? We often read those ninth step promises at meetings. I don't know if you read those here in Denmark as much. We'll be amazed before we're halfway through, you know. But in the 10th step, there's a whole bunch of 10th step promises that happen as well. And if you'll allow me, I'll just read those really quick. It comes right after what I just read before. It says, "And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol, for by this time sanity will have returned." Now, if you were here last night, you heard me talk about, you know, sanity is just simply defined as, you know, the clearness of mind or ability to think straight, especially in relation to alcohol. And why I had to turn my will and my thinking apparatus over to the care of God was because I'm not capable of judging me, you know, when I'm going to go do my inventory. I have to be in God's hand. But now, in step 10, it's saying, for now, sanity has returned. So I get my sanity back on page 84 in the English book, and I'm sorry I don't have the Danish list right in front of me. But, and then on page, and then it continues on, it says, we'll seldom be interested in liquor, and if tempted, we recoil from it as though from a hot flame. You know, I don't go back and look at the coil on my stove and go, maybe it won't burn me this time. Sanity has returned. I know if I put my hand on there, it will burn me. I know today, in my heart of hearts, if I pick up a drink today, I will turn into a drunk whore pig in no time at all. And probably within about 3 to 4 hours, I will have found my first Danish policeman, you know, and not in the good way. You know, I'll be probably handcuffed, you know. And it says that we react sanely and normally, and we find that this has automatically happened. This has been given to us. It's one of the gifts that we get from doing this. We'll see that our new attitude towards liquor has been given to us. Where does that come from? My higher power. It's been given to me, that attitude, without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. It truly is, that personality change that happens. It's truly a miracle. We're not fighting, neither are we afraid, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we've been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. Now, page 45 in my book, in the English book, says that I had to find a power that was going to solve my problem. In page 85, it says the problem has been removed. 40 pages. That's all it took. 40 pages. And we talk about, got to go read the big book. No, it's just that much. That's where my spiritual awakening was going to happen for me. But it takes a lot of work and takes a lot of willingness. We're neither cocky nor are we afraid. That's just our experience. But then it says there's a warning that if I let up on my spiritual program, I'm headed for trouble. Because alcohol is still out there. Tiger has sharp teeth, and I'm not cured of alcoholism. I'm still an alcoholic. I'm just as much an alcoholic today as I was when I walked into the rooms. I cannot blame a relapse on the physical craving or the allergy that we talked about in the doctor's opinion. I'm stone cold sober. And if I pick up a drink today, it's because my mental obsession told me it was okay to do that. Stone cold sober. An ounce of whiskey into the milk will be fine. You know, that kind of crazy that just like sets in without any warning at all. And I'm powerless over that. That's why I have to stay real close to my higher power. I have to continue to watch my behavior. I have to continue to watch my attitudes and continually take my inventory. And when I was wrong, promptly admit it. That's what I resent about this step. I didn't write about it. I should call my sponsor. The step says that when we were wrong, not if we were wrong. It started making an assumption that I'm going to be wrong. And I frequently am. I'm actually happy to say I'm frequently wrong. And the people at work don't get it when I say that. You know, it's like, I was probably wrong. I'm like, what do you mean? You're just like admitting that you were wrong? It's like, yeah, I was probably wrong. My whole ideas were wrong. I interpreted this the wrong way. I read your email the wrong way. Whatever. I was wrong. It has become so easy to say. Because what did it used to be? I'm late for work. You wouldn't have believed the traffic, and there was this accident out on Highway 17, and then there was a truck that had overturned, and then somebody else would go, I just came across Highway 17, it was fine. You weren't there, but I mean, they must have cleaned it up by then. You know, we've got all the excuses going on. Today, if I just tell the truth, I only have one story to remember. It's as simple as that. But I have to remember that, you know, again, I'm trying to align my will with God's will. And I'll talk about that more in step 11. But really about, I questioned when I got here about the whole notion of, if I've taken an inventory in step 4, and I've tried to clean up my past in 5 through 11, or 5 through 9, why do I need to go back and do another 4 later on? If I've got step 10 to just kind of keep things clean. And my sponsor explained it to me this way, and I love this analogy. He said, Doug, do you sweep your floor in your kitchen every day or every other day or whenever it seems to need it? And I said, yeah. He says, what color is the floor? And I said, well, it's kind of a tingy beige. He goes, really? He says, when was the last time you scrubbed it? Oh, I don't know. It's been a couple of years probably since I actually got down and scrubbed it. And he says, you know, it's very much like that in our lives. I can go in and sweep my floor every day, and it looks kind of clean on the surface. I can do that with step 10 as well. I can, you know, if I've stepped on your toes today, I can say, oh, I'm sorry, I was really wrong. I didn't mean to do that. How can I make it right, you know? He says, but once in a while, we need to go back because this little layer of film has built up on that kitchen floor. And so sometimes we need to actually go back and scrub it. And I said, really? He goes, well, when was the last time you did your inventory? I said, oh, I don't know. It's probably been about 4 or 5 years. He goes, good. We're going to do an inventory. Start writing. So he had me go back, and he had me write another fourth step. And what I learned from that in the insufficiency of doing just 10 steps to stay sober, he said, how many resentments do you think you're going to have on your list this time? And I said, oh, I'll probably have, you know, 5, 7. Because I'm really happy-go-lucky guy now. You know, I really don't get angry at people anymore. You know, I was so Pollyanna. And he goes, really? Okay, well, go ahead and start writing. Well, you know, 20 or 30 names later, you know, I looked at that list and I thought, I didn't know that I was that angry or that I had that much resentment towards people. And these were people that were not on my original list. This is like new coworkers or new resentments because, you know, my husband did something or my parents did something or whatever. It was all new stuff. But I was so quick to just kind of dismiss it and live and let live, and it's okay, you do whatever you want, not realizing that it really things affected me. Other people were affecting me, and I didn't realize that until I actually put pen to paper. So what 10 allows me to do is really stay clean today, in the moment. I know that I got confused because in the 12 and 12 it goes on and talks about, you know, then there's the spot check inventory, then there's the one you do at night, and then there's those you do annually, and it confused me because it seemed a little contradictory. So for me, again, you know, everybody has their own interpretation or the way that they use step 10. I use it on a daily walking around right now basis. If I know immediately that I've harmed you, step does not say wait until nighttime and review it. It says, you know, because if I get sick in the morning, I'm not going to have a good day. And I've completely wasted that day that could have been useful to others. And then I will invariably probably end up harming at least another 5 or 6 people in the process, you know. And they may not even know it. They'll just think I'm in a bad mood. But I've spiritually harmed them, if not physically. And so what I try to do is I try to do what the step says. Continue to take personal inventory. And when I'm wrong, promptly admit it. And it doesn't say I'm sorry. We learned that in step 9. We don't say that we're sorry. We say we were wrong. I was wrong for what I did. And how can I make it right? So in short, that's kind of, you know, what I try to do with my 10th step. And that's how I separate it between 10 and 4. There's a whole bunch of great stuff also in the 12 and 12 because Bill wrote a lot more about step 10, you know, the 14 years later. And the one statement that he wrote that I also got a big resentment about was that it is spiritual axiom that every time we are disturbed, no matter what the cause, there's something wrong with us. No, there's not. I was not in the wrong on this one. Yes, there's something wrong with me. And it might be just my interpretation of the situation. It might be that I jumped to conclusions and didn't have all the information. You know, it might be that I was just in a bad mood and I was closed-minded. But in some way, there was something wrong with me. And so what really, step 10 is kind of a couple of parts. One is, if I do something wrong, or when I do something wrong, promptly admitting it. But the other part of that is, how do I stay clean? How do I stay right with others? You know, and probably one of the biggest ones that I love to use today is restraint of tongue. You know, restraint of tongue. Withholding saying what I really want to say, and not, like, unleashing on somebody before actually having given it some thought. Now, for anybody who's new, let me give you some hope, because an old timer told me once, and I don't know if this is true, but it's kind of been my experience, that for every year of sobriety, you have 1 second of reaction time. When I was new, First year, second year, 2 seconds and I'm reacting. Boom, right there. You know, God willing, I'll have 30 years in December. Now I can sit back for 29 seconds and go, okay, let me think about this through. Yeah. Yeah, probably ripping her head off is probably not the wise idea. How can I be helpful to her? God save me from being angry. Thy will not mine be done. You know, taste your words before you spit them out was another great expression that I heard. And so that's how I get to stay clean today is and stay right with my fellows today is by not reacting. Go back and do a bit of an inventory on it. Find out why is this irritating me? What of my spirit, how is this affecting me spiritually, you know, and what could I be doing differently? There's a great prayer, a 10th step prayer that I used even today. And it says, God, please let everyone tomorrow treat me as I treated them today. Let everyone tomorrow treat me as I treated them today. And if I treated people pretty bad today, tomorrow is not going to probably be a very good day. So it causes me to think and pause beforehand and say, if this is going to come back to me tomorrow, what do I need to do today? You know, it's a good little tool. And I've got a whole bunch of other quotes that I've heard at meetings and stuff like that. But let me move on to step 11, because step 11 is so beautiful. Step 11 suggests prayer and meditation. We don't have to be shy on that matter. And my big book gives me a couple of great things to do right off, and probably most of us have done this. It's really, really simple. In step 11 in the big book, it starts off with when I retire at night. It tells me when to do it. This is my end of the day reflection back on the day step, not the walking around and getting sick in the morning and staying sick all day step. This is my way to kind of reflect on the day, and it tells me that I'm to constructively review the day, not destructively, right? And not get into self-pity, not get into worry and resentment. It says constructively review the day because I'm really good about looking at the negative. But sometimes it's hard for me to look at the positive and say, what did I do right today? You know, what did I didn't do? The day was not a total mess. What did I do right today? And let's see if the steps are in here as well. It says, were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? Step 4. Do we owe an apology? Step 8 and 9, right? Have we kept something to ourselves which should be discussed with another person at once? Step 5. Were we kind and loving toward all? What could we have done better? Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time? Were we thinking what we could do for others and what we could pack into the stream of life? And then it gives me a warning. It says, but we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection. Why? Because that will diminish my usefulness to other people. If I'm in worry, I'm only thinking about me. If I'm in remorse, I'm in self-pity. I'm only thinking about me. I can't be effective to other people if I'm only thinking about me. And also, God can't enter a mind that's only absorbed with me either, you know? I need to get out of my mind. And so it says that after making our review, we ask God's forgiveness, step 6, you know, and inquire what corrective measures should take. And then in my book, I wrote, and then go to bed. That's all I need to do. Then go to bed. Because somewhere in the night, God can enter my mind and let me know what I could have done differently. And maybe tomorrow I'll be able to do things just a little bit better than I did today, right? And then it goes on to say that, you know, upon awakening, we think about the next 24 hours. And I do this, not every day, but to the best of my ability, several times a week at least. And there's a direct correlation between my attitude when I do this and when I don't. I'll be at work, 11 o'clock. I've already been on the 4 horrible conference calls. And my attitude sucks. And then I'll realize, oh, Doug, you didn't pray this morning. I didn't ask God to direct my thinking today. I didn't ask for the courage to do the next right thing today. Step 11 says that we continue to sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God, which implies that I already have one. And then it tells me there's only one thing I need to pray for. Well, 2 things. Pray for the knowledge of God's will for me and the power to carry that out. That's all I need to pray for. I don't need the Santa Claus God anymore. I don't need to pray for a new car unless it's to carry newcomers to meetings. It can be helpful to somebody else, right? You know, then I can pray for the new car. I'm just kidding. No, it just says, you know, I'm praying for the knowledge of God's will for me and the power to carry that out. So, you know, in my book, it says that before I begin, I ask God to divorce me from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives. You know, because I can't review my day if I've got selfish and self-seeking motives, because then I'm going to be Doug's running the show again. And we'll publish a book as Doug sees it and all that. I don't need that. I need God to direct my thinking, because I already believe that God can restore me to sanity from step two. He's demonstrated through the next steps up through step 10 that he's only got my best interest in mind. So of course I want to try to deepen my understanding of whatever that power is that I just happen to call God. It says here we ask for an inspiration. Oh, there are times that I don't know what decision to make. And I just remembered something, but I'll come back to it. Okay. There will be times that I may not know what decision to make. And it tells me right in my big book. It says we relax and take it easy. We ask for an inspiration, intuitive thought, or a decision. I'm asking for that intuition. I can't do it if my head is racing. So I have to relax, take it easy, breathe. Here's where my meditation can kick in. Now, how much time do I spend getting dressed in the morning? I don't know about you. You know, maybe some of you might just take 10 minutes. You're in and out of the shower, boom, shave, you're gone. Some of us might take an hour picking out our clothes, sitting on the edge of the bed, wondering, should I wear that shirt? Should I wear that shirt? You know, coiffing our hair forever, putting on the makeup, whatever it might be. But how much time do I put into trying to work on the insides and my spirit and in my mind? Because that's where my higher power dwells. How much time am I spending even just a fraction of the time that I spend getting dressed and showered and cleaned up and ready for the outsides to be seen as I do the insides? And that was an eye-opener for me, because I don't. I didn't for a long time. And sometimes, most of the time, I still don't. But if I take, say, 30 minutes, my routine is usually about 30 minutes in the morning. But if I can just take 5 extra minutes or 10 extra minutes, imagine what kind of a day I might actually have if I've gotten right and I've gotten spiritually centered for the day. And I've asked my higher power, you know, one of our old timers used to say, prayer and meditation is not about talking to God and listening to God. Prayer is just about reporting for duty. And she was an old, old, old timer. I mean, she probably had 120 years sobriety, lived down in Texas. She's dead now. And she would say, you know, that's what she would say. She'd say, good morning, God. I'm just here reporting for duty. What can I do for you today? And that was the extent of her morning prayer, you know, reporting for duty. There's actually an interesting story. Sister Ignatia, who worked in Akron, Ohio with Dr. Bob, she tells a story of walking through the ward one night really, really late, and she had a real sour attitude. She was tired. She was like, I just want to go to bed. And these drunks, she's constantly having to work with us drunks. And as she was walking down the hall to go back to her room to rest for the evening, some drunk that was sitting on the floor grabbed her habit. And as she walked by and said, sister, would you please pray for me? And she grabbed her habit and she goes, you pray for him yourself. God loves to hear from strangers. And then she just went on. And I was a stranger to my God. You know, he was always there, but I was the one that was the stranger. As I go through my day, I need to also, again, pause when I'm agitated or doubtful. And for a long time, I read that as I just need to pause when I'm agitated so I don't open my mouth. But I never read that word doubtful. I just skipped right over it for many, many years. A lot of times I'll go through my day and I'll have doubt. I'll have worry. It's like, oh, that project isn't going to work, or that I'm going to have to call the bank and they're not going to want to talk to me and they're not going to want to give me a credit card or loan or whatever. And I'm doubtful. And what my book tells me is that, no, here's another opportunity to seek, you know, God's will and understanding for me by pausing when I'm agitated or doubtful and asking for the right thought or action. I don't need to do anything else. God, what's the next thing I need to do? Please show. And my prayer, because I'm Norwegian heritage, my brain is a little thick. Probably because I'm American, my brain is thick. I don't always recognize God's will when it comes right in front of my face. It can be right here staring me in the face and I don't see it. So my prayer now today is, God, please show me your will for me in a way that I will recognize it. And then grant me the strength and the power and the courage to do what the next right thing is. Because I won't see it. And then I relax and take it easy. I pause. And all of a sudden, I'll go start washing the dishes, or I'll start go for a walk in, around my office or something, because I have to get out of my mind long enough so that God can get in there. And all of a sudden I'll get back to my desk, or I'll get back to whatever the problem was in my mind. And all of a sudden my perspective on the problem has changed. A new idea has come in. Where does that idea come from? The idea might be, oh, well, you need to call, you know, you need to call Greg, or you need to call Meredith or something, and maybe she'll have an answer for you. And then God will speak through other people as well. And what I love is that it says that, you know, we constantly remind ourselves that we're no longer running the show, humbly saying to ourselves many times each day, thy will be done. And here's some promises. It says, we are then much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, and foolish decisions. I didn't know those were dangerous, but apparently they are. Especially the excitement. I can get overly excited about things really easy. And then all of a sudden I'm making plans for everybody. You know, I'm writing the script and I'm whatever. And I'm running the show again because I'm overly excited. Fear, anger, worry, self-pity, and decisions. All of those things can be very dangerous for an alcoholic of my type. Because what it does is it cuts me off from my higher power. And it makes me back in charge of things. You know, we don't tire so easily, for we're not burning up energy foolishly as we did when we were trying to arrange life to ourselves. And then my favorite paragraph on that page is, it works, it really does. It works, it really does. And I'm undisciplined, so I have to continually ask my higher power to discipline me in what we've just done on steps 3 through 11. So when I do my review at night, what kind of tools do I use? And I was given a list a long time ago, which was, what's the difference between the personality characteristics of a self-willed person versus a God's willed person? And this is when I retire at night, I can kind of look back and constructively say, which side of the column was I on today? And there are things like, you know, characteristics of a God run person, or somebody who's connected with their higher power, is interest in others, honesty, courage, consideration, humility, giving and sharing, calmness, gratitude, moderation, patience. I didn't have most of those things when I was growing up, or until I came into the rooms. Self-forgiveness, modesty, humility to seek God's will, self-forgiveness, trust, and faith. But a self-willed person is usually the opposite of those. Self-seeking, selfish, dishonest, frightened, inconsiderate, prideful, greed, lust. That's, you know, envy, sloth, gluttony. There was actually, it's no longer on this list. I was given, trashy thinking used to be on the list. I guess they converted that to just lust. And so at any time I will look at this list and I'll say, which side of this list am I on? Am I trying to run my life on God's will, or am I trying to run my life on self-will? And I will always be on both sides, because God gave human beings will power, and he expects us to use it, but he expects us to use it for right purpose. And so I'm never going to get rid of self entirely. But the best that I can do is try to align my will with God's will through step 11 and try to get to the one side of the list more than I'm on the other. And like I said, it's always a variation on the two. But the benefits for that, and I'll end with this, and maybe I'll just open up the mic to see if anybody, rather than questions, just kind of share your experience. There's, at the end of step 11 and the 12 and 12, here's some great benefits for doing a solid step 11. And it talks about, perhaps one of the greatest rewards of meditation and prayer is a sense of belonging that comes to us. And the word belonging is italicized. It can mean a lot of different things. Belonging to a fellowship, my place on this planet, place in the universe, my relationship with my higher power, my relationship with you, I belong. We no longer live in a completely hostile world. We're no longer, which I strive for in America right now. We're no longer lost and frightened and purposeless. The moment we catch even a glimpse of God's will, the moment we begin to see truth, justice, love as the real and eternal things in life, we are no longer deeply disturbed by all the seeming evidence to the contrary that surrounds us in purely human affairs. We know that God lovingly watches over us, and we know that when we turn to him, all will be well with us here and hereafter. great example of that. And the last job that I had, they laid off my whole department. There was five of us in my department, me and four women. I was working for a cosmetics company at the time. Don't ask me how I got into a cosmetics company working in Silicon Valley, but I was there. And they let off the whole group. And the other women in my group, they were all crying and, oh, we didn't see this coming and what am I going to do and it's horrible. And Doug, why are you not upset? I'm just smiling. Why are you not upset? And I said, because I learned a long time ago that everything is going to be just fine. I know that down in my gut today, that no matter what happens, it's all going to be okay. It may not be comfortable. I might have to do a lot of work. I might have to go through a lot of crap. But I know that it's going to be okay. And the reason why I know that is because you taught me how to believe that there's a power greater than me that only wants my best interests, and that's to stay sober and to help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety and to fit myself to be of maximum service to those about me in this world. And as long as I stay focused on those things, I knew everything was going to be fine. And I posted on Facebook that evening and said, hey, I just lost my job. I wonder what God's got planned next. Just like that. No self-pity. No, what am I going to do? Can somebody lend me money? None of that. I was like, wonder what God's got planned next. And an hour later, I got a call from a guy that I used to work with years earlier. And he said, I just interviewed for a job, and it wasn't a good fit for me, but I think it's perfect for you. Can I forward your resume? Who arranges this, you know? That's a total God shot. My mom used to call those coincigods. And total God shot. And so, you know, if I've learned anything from step 10, is that as long as I keep myself on the, you know, take the high road, don't, you know, continue to harm others around me, and I continue to seek and do God's will to the best of my ability, I know everything is going to be okay. I don't know where God wants me to be living next year. I don't think God cares where I'm living next year, as long as I'm happy and I'm helping somebody else along the way. So we've got a little bit of extra time, 5 or 10 or minutes or so. Maybe hear some of your experience as well on steps 10 and 11. Would that be all right,
yeah,
Mr. Chairman? All right. Thank you very much for allowing me to speak. Okay.
Anybody got some experience they want to share? Some fantastic wisdom? Something funny?
Thank you, dog. I get really nervous when I have this. My name is Tom. I'm an alcoholic. I hope everybody hear me. No, I remember I heard when I came in about 10, the four was a moral inventory. I didn't like that moral word. And suddenly 10 was a personal inventory. It was a little easier in the time. But I remember I used step 10 a lot before. And later years, it's a little strange in the evening when you go to bed. Nothing have happened during the day. I'm not working. I don't have anything to deal with, really. So sometimes I wish I had a little nice little resentment to go through now and again, but it doesn't happen. So, but I use a lot the step 11. So I love that from the very beginning. And I didn't do that the first year because when I came into an English-speaking Catholic group, I thought it was, and I said, I'm from Sweden, and we don't have God in Sweden, so I didn't have to bother a lot about that in the beginning. But it took me anyhow. I wanted people to talk about this God and prayer and meditation, but it took me about 10 years to start with meditation. And then I start really to... which have been the most important thing in my life since then. And I can see everything as you read. I don't remember what you said, but there were some few good things there. And it was just that everything changed in meditation. And that have been my experience. I don't go to call up a sponsor or something like that. It like to take it with God directly. They warn us for that, to go to God immediately. We have to relate it to another person. But I do that, and that has worked fine for me all this year. And I see also when I use step 10 that I can see I'm not frequently wrong today, as I said, because I like this when we were wrong. not that means I'm not always wrong any longer. And that's the difference today. I said the consciousness and the conscious today that I know what happened in my life today. And I love God for that. And I think the only thing God wants for me is that I love Him. Not that I should go out and do big things as I wanted to do when I was drinking. So I love to listen to you, Doug. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Anders, alcoholic. Thank you, Doug. This might be one of those when moments. And I'm trying to read from my phone and it locked itself on me. But it says, you mentioned how, because just last weekend, there was a man who was brutally shot down in the room when he said that you have to do the 12 step to have a spiritual awakening. And somebody else said, well, I have to do the 12 step in order to do the 12 step. You have to help others, right? And you mentioned that the spiritual experience, it starts in the ninth step. Okay. Yeah, thanks. That's what I was, we were talking about mansplaining where I was last weekend, and how important it is that we don't speak in absolutes, that this is the solution, this is exactly how it works. And somebody's pacemaker is going off. But anyway, I just wanted to, in case there is a newcomer in the room, that you don't have to wait until the ninth step or the 12th or any other step to have your spiritual awakening. If you're awake, that's it. Tech.
My name is Megan. I'm an alcoholic. I actually had my spiritual awakening in step one. My experience about step 10 in Denmark, in Copenhagen, is that I never hear about it. Never. I hear about 11 step a lot. And I hear about the 11 step in the evening being the 10 step. And that's a pity, I think, because in my view, it's a very important step, step 10. And bringing that back to the last subject, and still I don't do it. Because when I do my daily program, my morning routines, then I might get on the horse again about my 10 step. They follow each other. My experience with 10 step is that it is enormously effective. It is like miracles happens in half minutes. One of my biggest issue is my temper. I have a big temper, and in the roads too. Yeah, and I can behave so that I really think that, oh, I'm so lucky that you're not there. And sometimes I forget to pray to God to have it removed before I call somebody. But even though I have experienced time after time that it's like in 30 seconds when I have this other person in the phone, it's gone. It's just vanished. And it's, every time I'm totally surprised. Even though I've tried it many times, I get surprised because it's such a big temper, it's such big emotion, such lots of energy that just because I tell another guy about it. I have also tried the opposite in the car with the family. The wife was bitching or something. Of course, it wasn't me being anything, driving into the side, get out, told the guy, it vanished for 2 minutes, then we have it again. But I was new. I just made the step, so of course I just did it again. And it never vanished again. Yeah. So my experience with the 10 step is it is really, really, really effective. And the last thing, my sponsors, not my former sponsor, and I guess maybe his sponsor said, he called the 11th step in the evening, he called the 10th step safety net. And I really like that, because that is what it is. It is meant to be the safety net of the 10th step. If I have missed something in the daytime, I'm gonna catch it up in the evening, where I'm really lazy doing it. Thank you.
My name is Lisa. I'm an alcoholic. And then I will ask you, how do you remember what you have done wrong through the day in the evening?
Thank you, Lisa. It's a very good question. How do I know if I've done something wrong? Sometimes I don't. Sometimes I don't know. But the longer I'm sober, the better I am at looking at people's reactions, it's people that I usually harm the most. The credit card companies are very quick to tell me when I'm wrong. My bill payers, my mortgage broker, whoever, they're all very prompt when I'm wrong there. But when my interactions with people, sometimes I'll do my best, but there's a couple of things. One is, if I all of a sudden get this little knot in my stomach, or I just don't feel right, it's like, I don't think I really should have said what I just said. Maybe I didn't think about my words before I spit them out. And sometimes I'll ask someone, it's like, did what I say offend you? Or did what I say harm you in any way? And somebody might turn back and say, yeah, Doug, I really didn't care for your tone on that last phone call or on the last conversation we had. Then immediately, of course, I'll say I was completely wrong. I didn't mean to do that, and I apologize for harming. How can I make it right? Instead of just trying to defend myself and saying that, oh, well, you didn't understand what I was trying to say, and then repeating it over again, and in doing so, creating more harm. The other thing is in watching people's reactions. Case in point, 3 weeks ago, I was in New York at the General Service Conference, and one of the staff members from the office happened to be walking by, and her head was kind of down, and I said, oh, hey, so-and-so, and she's like, oh, hi, and just kept walking along. That's not a normal reaction. And so later in the day, I walked up to her, and I said, I won't use her name, but I just said, when I said hi to you this morning, your reaction was a bit reserved, and I want to just check out with you. Have I ever said anything or done anything to offend you or to harm you? And she was like, oh, no. I'm in work mode. I've got my head down. I can't talk to people. I'm just trying to get over to where I need to go. And I read the situation incorrectly. I thought it was all about me, and I had done something to make her feel bad about me in some way. But it wasn't the case. So I become really sensitive. I don't like feeling uncomfortable. That's the beauty of the steps, is that I used to have a really wide path of uncomfortability that I could tolerate, Now my path is really narrow. And as soon as I get off of that path, I get uncomfortable really quick. And I'll have to check it out sometimes. And then there are other times where I know that I did something wrong, or I said something wrong, or I lied. And I'll be in a meeting, and somebody will say, hey, Doug, well, what about the delivery on XYZ, whatever the deliverable was? And I might say, oh, yeah, well, I'm like three-quarters of the way through that, and I should have it done by Friday. And then all of a sudden, I get that knot in my stomach going, Doug, that's not the truth. Because there's this little voice back here called a conscience. And little voice is saying, Doug, you're telling stories. That's not the truth. And what I learned to do, because it says promptly admitted, I'll stop and I'll go, you know what? That's not the truth. The truth is I'm only 20% done and I need another 2 weeks. And is that okay? They don't care. They're like, oh, you should have just said that in the first place. And yet I'm creating all my own stress around this. And sometimes, you know, yeah, I'm late on a project and I just have to promptly admit I'm late on this project, or I'm late on whatever that is, or, you know, oh, I'm horrible because I didn't return your call promptly or whatever. And I try to do better next time. Sometimes it takes somebody else pointing it out to me. Most of the time, I know if I'm right or wrong because I have that little voice inside. And it's get tuned. The longer you're sober, the more tuned it gets, as long as I'm open to it. So I love that about our program, is that it continues to get refined and a little bit better as time goes on.
Last, your one.
Thanks. I really like what you said about step 10. This is about our wrongs. Because it's like a step forward in maturity. Instead of saying, excuse me, I say, I was wrong. That's a huge difference. I love that about achieving 1 second for each sobriety year. Because in the beginning, I used to say, well, I guess I need to make a distance between the impulse from here and the action out of the mouth, so God can just pull something, serenity in between that. So that is what I'm acting on. But so today I have 21 seconds. That's fair.